Authentic Health Coaching Show. My name is Tom Corson Knowles, founder of Authentic Health Coaching, and we want to thank you today for subscribing to the Authentic Health Coaching Show. So we have an amazing free gift for you with Dr. Corson's top 5 nutrition tips. It is the number one guide taking your health to the next level, and you can get your free copy of this amazing report at AuthenticHealthCoach.com. Today on the show, we have an incredible guest for you, Karen Koenig. And Karen is an expert on dieting and on weight loss, and especially on the psychological aspects of it. And you've probably seen her on TV, you've probably seen many of her books, like The Rules of Eating Normal. And she's really an expert in eating disorders and how to overcome them. And I know there's many, many millions of Americans who are suffering from eating disorders, whether it's anorexia or bulimia, or much more commonly, it's just emotional eating. And that's what we're really talking about in this episode today, is emotional eating and why so many people are eating because of their emotions, and how you can really overcome that, change those habits to have a much more healthy eating pattern and a much more healthy life. And if you've struggled to lose weight for years and years and years and tried all kinds of different diets, this might just be the solution for you, because Karen really knows how to boil it down to the simple science of how to change those emotional eating patterns that hold you back, that keep you gaining the weight, and how to change those into healthy eating patterns, into normal eating patterns that will help you lose the weight naturally as you progress through life, and just create an amazing, amazing health and vibrancy and energy. And you just feel a lot better about yourself when you know that you're doing the right things. And Karen shows you exactly how to do that today. So take great notes and have an incredible day.
Well, Karen, thanks so much for being on the Authentic Health Coaching Show today. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background and what got you interested in healthy eating?
Thank you for having me. My work comes directly from my own eating problem. I was what I call a world-class binge eater for many years and a chronic dieter, and I learned how to eat normally and eat according to appetite, and then I went back to school, got a master's in education, a master's in social work, and I'm now able to meld my own experience with what I know about psychology.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And so do you only work with people who are chronic binge eaters, or do you work with more of a broad spectrum of people who maybe just do, overeating sometimes emotionally or something like that?
Mostly I work, people seek me out because of my 4 books and because they know that that's my expertise, but I also do have a few clients who don't have eating issues and come to me for depression, anxiety, relationship problems, the usual.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So you really work on the psychological aspects of eating then.
Exactly. And that part is so important. It is as important as knowing about nutrition, because as we know, we are inundated with nutritional information, and yet we know very little about why we eat what we do and what kind of hungers, non-food hungers, that we feed with food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's so true. And, if you take like 95% of Americans and put them next to a big salad and a hamburger, most of them know the salad is healthier. They all know that. But that doesn't mean they always make that healthier choice. So what stops people from making the healthier choice even when they know they should be making it?
Well, a few things. One is called, it actually has a name, it's called the boomerang effect. And that means that when we are inundated with information over and over and over again, we stop listening. And this has certainly happened with nutrition. You can't turn on the TV or radio or read anything in print without there being an article on what's healthy to eat. So we tune that out. And that is coupled with not liking being told what to do. I mean, after all, if I said to you, you have to do this, and you should, and you must do that, there's a natural response to say, yeah, make me. So people rebel against the strictness of healthy eating. Sadly, they do.
So what's the solution then?
Well, the solution is to understand that when you do that, you're only hurting yourself. That this often happens in adults who had strict upbringing, either around food or other issues. So that, a parent would say, you must do this, you should, you have to do that. And the only way the child can stay themselves is to say no. So it starts out as an interpersonal problem, but long after our parents are dead, we have that problem as an intrapsychic problem within ourselves. So a part of us is saying, you really should eat that salad. And a part of us is saying, yeah, make me. I'm going for the hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
So the way out of that is to understand that you're rebelling and understand that you're hurting yourself. And to maybe make the choice and say, well, you know, I am going to have part of that hamburger today. Or I'm going to have that hamburger and I'm going to enjoy it. But make it as a conscious choice, not as an act of war against yourself.
Well, I think that's a great point. And, you know, it happens all the time for me if I mention to someone that maybe they're eating fast food or eating an unhealthy meal, and I mention it to them, a lot of times people get really defensive about that. And they'll say, well, you know, who are you to tell me to eat healthy or something like that? So is this that same kind of rebellious impulse that we just don't want other people to have control over us? Is that what it's really about?
I think in large part for many people it is that. Of course, if you had the kind of upbringing that most of us don't have, unfortunately, where parents age appropriately say, well, which do you think is going to be better for you? You know, whether it's drinking and driving or picking a college to go to or picking friends or food. We rarely hear that. Most of the time, our parents are very busy telling us what to do because they love us and they want us to turn out okay. But if we don't have enough free will growing up, there's going to be a backlash. And you're right, people do get defensive, which means that you've hit on a nerve, because if they were fine with what they were eating, they probably wouldn't make a big deal of it. You know, a lot of times what I hear people say is, I know I shouldn't be eating this, but. And that's a tip-off to us. You know, that's the should and the rebellion against the should. So anytime we tell ourselves, I should do this or I shouldn't do that, it's time to really stop and say, what's going on? What kind of warfare is going on within me?
Hmm. And that's amazing. And I feel like, I mean, for me personally, this kind of thing happens every day, and not necessarily with my food, but maybe with a business decision or relationships or my exercise program. You know, we always have those doubts, and sometimes we find ourselves doing things that we know we shouldn't be doing. So it seems like a common occurrence in every area of our life. So how do you deal with that when that comes up?
Well, the way to deal with it is to take away the should and replace that word. And it really, you know, I work with hundreds of people on this. Gradually the word drops out of your vocabulary. There are no shoulds. The only thing we have to do in life is die. Yes?
Yeah.
Everything else is really optional.
Right.
So everything else is choices. So to remind yourself, there's no shoulds and there's no shoulds. That's a word left over from childhood. All we have are, I want this and I want that. I want to eat sweets and I want to lose weight. So when you make them equal and you make them neutral, there's no emotion attached. There's no proving anything, no autonomy, no proving you're autonomous, no needing to rebel. Then it becomes, well, if you do one thing, you have these consequences. If you do another thing, you have another set of consequences. So you really want to stay emotionally neutral. And I bet if you got rid of the should and the should about whatever your, you know, issues you're talking about, and just made them one, you'd see a whole different reaction from you.
That's awesome. That's really amazing advice. So let's say then we've got that. We've got our two wants. Maybe, you know, we want to eat fast food all the time because we enjoy it and it tastes good and it comforts us. But at the same time, we want to lose weight. So what do you do then when you have those two conflicting wants?
Well, then whichever one we want more wins out. But there are ways to subtly influence the process. Most of the time when people make decisions, they make them unconscious about thinking about the future. You know, they know that eating fast food will trigger dopamine, the feel-good neurotransmitter in their brain, and I blame them not at all for wanting that little, you know, burst of good feeling. However, I tell people that nothing tastes as good as pride. So no burst of dopamine is going to feel as good as knowing in the long term that you can take good care of yourself. You know, when we were kids and we would do something great, I remember clearly what that felt like, to just be filled with pride. I was so proud of myself. Nothing feels better than that. And truly nothing feels worse than being ashamed. So if at every decision point, you can say to yourself, will this, whatever I'm going to do or not do, make me feel proud or ashamed in the long term? And you can make decisions based on pride. You're going to start feeling terrific, and you're going to be making better decisions for yourself in the long run.
That's powerful. That's amazing.
So that's how you get around, oh, this tastes so good. I would rather be proud of myself than have something taste good in the moment. And I mean, I eat sweets and treats, you know, but I make my decisions about them in a very non-emotional way. I really eat according to appetite.
Gotcha. So, but how do you take that emotion out? Because, I mean, even if you rephrase it as, you know, just two things that you want, I mean, is that going to get rid of all the emotion connected with eating?
Well, you know, basically, food is for fuel and, in a minor way, to get us to eat it for pleasure. So it doesn't have to be a big emotional issue. You know, when you go to fill your car up with gas, you know, you look at the gas tank gauge and you say, well, it's a little low. I need to fill up. And, you know, maybe you look at price or you look at the octane level and fill your car up and you're on your way. So this culture, and it seems the world nowadays, is focused on food being emotional. And really, that's not the purpose of it, that we should feel passionate. We should feel lots of emotion about other things in life. I'm not so sure we have to feel that attached emotionally to food.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree with that. But, you know, a lot of times, though, if someone's working or if they get low blood sugar, you know, they haven't eaten in a while, they get so hungry that maybe it's not even emotion that comes up, but it's just that hunger pangs and the feelings and sensations that just they just have to eat right away. And
well,
then they make a bad choice.
Yes, but I would say, why did they let themselves get so hungry? I mean, it sounds paradoxical after what I just said about, you know, food playing less of a role, but when we need fuel, we need fuel. So that is something that we do need to be careful of, and that needs to take precedence, same as, you know, you don't want to drive your car with the needle hovering around empty. You want to make sure that you have enough fuel. So if you eat according to appetite, you want to eat when you're moderately hungry and not put it off and not say, oh, I'll eat later or I don't need the calories, but to think of it as nurturing yourself and taking care of your body. So you don't get to that point, which is when you are famished and what I call so hungry you would eat the hair off your arm, and then, of course, you eat too quickly and you eat too much.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, honoring your hunger is part of taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes you proud of yourself? To say, yeah, you know, I can feed myself when I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are some of your biggest tips for maybe some changes people could make to either the way that they eat or what they eat or how they eat that can make a big impact on, you know, stopping overeating or something like that?
Okay. I give you a number of really important tips. The first is to eat when you're moderately hungry. Our bodies, physiologically, through evolution, have developed to the point where that's when food tastes best. So if you really want to enjoy food, you know, do a hunger scale, 1 to 10. Eat between maybe a 4 and an 8. And stay in touch with hunger signal. Don't push them away. Don't think, oh, I'm too busy. This is a message coming in, the same as you wouldn't ignore a fax or an email. This is just information. So that's part of it. The second is to eat foods that you enjoy. You know, diets don't work. 95% of people who diet and lose weight regain it. 90% regain more than they originally lost within 1 to 5 years. So when we diet, we feel deprived. Our metabolism slows down. We become preoccupied with food. People who eat normally eat the things that they like. So that's a whole new way of thinking about food, not to just always choose healthy. The third tip is to eat mindfully. You know, when you're working, it's true, you get you're distracted. It's not a good time to eat. To chew as many times as you can, to let food sit on your tongue, because that's how the information about satiation will get transmitted to your brain, and to really enjoy the food and stay with it. If you're eating, don't talk. If you're talking, don't eat. Don't multitask and eat, at least while you're learning to be a normal eater. Another tip is to really stop eating when you are no longer hungry. You know, we wait till we're full and then we groan and say, oh, that feels awful. Keep asking yourself while you're eating, am I hungry? Am I still hungry? Am I still hungry? Change your beliefs about finishing the food on your plate. Don't look at what other people are eating. You know, like we learned in school, keep your eyes on your own plate, yeah. On your own paper, keep your eyes on your own plate. Cover your food when you're done. Remove yourself from the table. If you're feeling emotional, figure out what you're feeling. It's not about food. I mean, those are some tips. I could go on and on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really powerful. But what about for someone who maybe they're overweight and they've been struggling with their weight like their whole life, like so many millions of Americans are? You know, is that necessarily something that's emotional going on, or is it? I mean, if they're doing the yo-yo diets and these kinds of things, is that always an emotional component to that, or is it just maybe they're just not embracing the right diet and lifestyle?
It's always hard to say. It's always hard to say always. So. I would say that if people have been dieting their whole life, they have dysregulated their appetite, because that's what dieting does. It changes your metabolism. It increases fat storage. So I would say pretty much if people have been dieting their whole lives, their appetite is dysregulated. Second thing is genetics play a huge part. If we look at, you know, go 2 or 3 generations back, maybe our family is big boned. Maybe they're stocky. Maybe we come from a lineage of large people. So sometimes it means accepting the weight you are and trying to be fit and healthy and not trying to lose weight, because that weight is probably not going to come off. There are people. I have a friend who's a normal eater, but she's not a healthy eater. She'll leave food on her plate. She eats when she's hungry. She doesn't nibble and nosh and eat emotionally, but she doesn't eat healthfully. So not eating healthful food can be part of why people eat a lot and eat the wrong thing and gain weight. But remember, if we're always eating healthfully, there's going to be that little voice in us that says, this isn't fair and this isn't fun and I feel deprived. So it's a tricky balance. Also, we live in the most thin-obsessed, fat-phobic culture in the history of time. And the pressure to be thin and eat healthfully really wears away at people. I had a client who just emailed me, and many of my clients are 200-300 pounds of chronically dieted, and she said, this is all I think about. All I think about is food. So sometimes it's also reminding people that there's other fabulous passions in life. You know, get out and do more things rather than stay inside and just eat. For many people, eating is the highlight of their day, which is pretty sad.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's, I think that's a great point, is that especially, you know, when you have an addiction, or maybe not even an addiction, but you just, you have an activity that you enjoy so much, like people who just love to eat. And I mean, I totally enjoy eating, but it's, I wouldn't consider it one of my hobbies, you know. I mean, and it's not something that, you know, I'm not sure exactly what I'm trying to say, but when you are addicted to something and you have that feeling, like that compulsion, like you have to do it, you have to kind of replace that activity with another activity. So I think that's a really great point.
Yes. Other things that you love that you feel as passionate about. The things that produce, you know, that trigger dopamine in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you just, you're high on life. And most people, when they say, I love to eat, they love the idea of eating. They like that full feeling. I'm not sure that they really love food, because I have seen people at breakfast be talking about where they're going to go to lunch, and at lunch talking about where they're going at dinner. They're not really present. They like the concept of food filling up their lives. And as you said, when you're doing other things, yeah, food is great, but it falls way back down on the line when you're doing other things that you love.
Absolutely. Well, what about people who, you know, probably might be thinking right now, well, you know, I know I don't have any emotional problems connected with eating, but maybe they do. I mean, how do you know if you have an emotional connection to eating that's unhealthy, or an unhealthy pattern of eating?
That's an excellent question. Somebody wrote me today, they eat in secret. If you are embarrassed to eat in public, there is something going on that needs to be resolved. It's a, if you're ashamed to eat, there's something else going on, because that's not a natural reaction to food. People who lack what I call life skills to distract themselves when they're upset, to soothe themselves in non-food ways, you know, take a walk, have a cry, call a friend, read a book, play with the dog, write in your journal. That has an emotional basis. This whole idea of the shoulds, and you can't tell me what to do, that's based in emotion. That's certainly not based in reason. What I tell people to do is this. This is very easy. If you have the urge to eat, you ask yourself, am I hungry? The answer is yes. How hungry? Hungry enough to eat? Okay, what do I want to eat? Going back to the first question, you have the urge to eat. Ask yourself, am I hungry? If the answer is no, automatically say, what am I feeling? And the thing is, many people who are overeaters have no idea what they feel. And it takes a while. And my second book, The Food Feelings Workbook, talks about seven emotions that prompt people to eat. And the whole book is a way of learning what emotions are for. They're not really there to annoy us and plague us. And it teaches people how to put emotions in their place so food can be in its own place. So those are some of the key elements to emotional eating, and the ways that people can know. Oh, basically, if you're not hungry and you're eating, something else is going on. You know, a lot of times we say, I'm bored, or, oh, I have work to do, and I'll eat because I don't want to do it. Well, that's having a conflict inside. That's on an emotional level. I want to do the work, I don't want to. It really has nothing to do with food. Food has just become, in this culture, the all-purpose answer to every question. turn that around by looking at food differently and looking at the rest of our lives differently.
That's powerful. I mean, I think that's so true. Food has just become kind of the scapegoat or the easy way out. But let's
Absolutely.
Talk about those two emotions, the boredom on one hand, and the other one was that conflict between, you know, you know you should be doing something or you want to do something, but you're not quite sure, you're afraid to do it or you're procrastinating about it. So let's talk about those two issues, because I think those are probably the biggest two emotional issues that most people face on a daily basis.
I talk a lot in my Food and Feelings workbook about boredom and loneliness. Boredom means you want something to do. You're looking for an activity. Doesn't mean you need to do it with other people, but your life is not very filled or fulfilled. Loneliness, which people often think that they're bored when they're really lonely. Lonely has to do with people. It's not that you really want to do anything, but you need a connection. So recognizing if you're wanting to eat, you know, you're walking around the kitchen or you're poking in the cabinet and say to yourself, am I hungry? No. Okay, what else is going on? Am I bored? Am I lonely? Do I want something to do or do I want people connection? Then based on the information you get, because that's what feelings are there for, to guide our internal world, based on that information, then you know what to do. You find something to do if you're bored, or you connect with people if you're lonely. But food doesn't really enter into that equation, and in fact, what it does is it prevents you from getting your real emotional needs met, which is even sadder, because you're doing something that isn't meeting your needs, that makes you, in the long run, feel poorly about yourself, and you're missing out on a fantastic opportunity to really get that need met. So that's boredom. The other thing you asked me about was
procrastination or conflict.
Okay. I say cut out the middle person. If you don't want to do something, don't do it. There's no. I had a friend who used to eat before he went to bed because he didn't want to go to bed. And this is very common. So I said to him, okay, don't go to bed. You don't need to have food as an excuse to stay up. I mean, at the time, he was probably in his 40s. You're 40 years old. You're allowed to decide not to go to bed. You don't have to come up with a reason. Of course, you may be tired in the morning, but don't put food in there because it doesn't belong in there. It's really an issue about whether you want to go to bed. So I would say the same thing. If you don't want to do something, don't do it. Don't insert food in the equation when it's really not about food at all. Make sense?
Absolutely. Well, tell us some stories of clients that you've worked with or success stories that you've seen in the field of people who have, you know, overcome these emotional challenges around eating and really achieved some great results with it.
I can give you a couple. One is I, before moving to Sarasota, Florida, I had a practice in Boston, Mass. And I had a client who came to see me after bariatric surgery, not very successful surgery. Because she still had all these emotional eating problems. And she lived with her father, who was a very, very, very difficult person. And eventually she was able to put him, I think he moved into an assisted living facility. The stress on her was just too much. She could not stop turning to food. And when he was in one place and she visited him and she could take care of herself and not have all that stress, she lost close to 100 pounds. Not obviously overnight. But sometimes we need to change our lives in order to change our eating. We think it's all about the food, but more often than not, it isn't. Another person I work with is over 80 and has always told herself she hated exercise. And so we tried all, you know, different ideas, traditional ideas for her. And she finally decided that she is uncomfortable with her body going to a gym or even practicing going to like a Tai Chi class. And she decided to get a recumbent bike at home and is now very, very happy because now she gets to watch all the TV programs that she normally would watch while she was eating.
Mm-hmm.
So making that kind of change was great for her. Sometimes eating is difficult if you have a spouse or a partner who is on all the time about weight or eating. And really what there is a problem in the relationship, not so much in the eating. And it's important for partners to not involve the other partner in their eating. It's important to say, this is my body. I know it upsets you when I eat, but I need to work on this myself, or else it becomes an interpersonal problem. So a lot of my clients, mostly women, have told their spouses or partners to back off and done very well then when they don't have someone else looking over their shoulder on what they're eating. I work with some clients who have bulimia, which is purging after eating, and they've learned to not only to tolerate keeping food down, but to eat less because they don't want to put themselves in the position of purging. So, again, I could go on with stories. I don't know exactly how many you want.
No, that's awesome. It's just great to hear because, you know, sometimes a lot of people out there, they think, well, maybe I'm the only one, or I'm the only one that I know with this problem. So they don't talk about it, they don't share about it, and they don't learn, you know, how they can make some changes, you know, to improve their condition. So I think it's so important to hear those stories because it really inspires other people to say, you know, well, if they can do it, then I can do it too.
You know, I do believe that we, it's not a level playing field, that we, in terms of genetic and early childhood, that we have different experiences, some more difficult than others, that predispose us to have a more positive or less positive relationship with food. But that being said, anyone at any age, and as I said, I have a client who's over 80, can change their eating and exercise and their lifestyle. It is a process, though. We are so used to dieting in 2 weeks. The biggest problem that I have is to say to clients, this is going to take you the better part of a year to several years, maybe 2 years. No one worked harder than me, and I don't ask people to do anything that I didn't have to do to become a normal eater. But it is a process. There's setbacks. There's frustrations. There are times you feel hopeless. And the more life skills you have to cope with frustration and these down periods, the better you're going to do. I have a food feelings message board that has several hundred members. And people come and they talk about food and feelings, and they share their experiences. When one person's down, the other's up. But the important thing is something that you mentioned, they never feel alone. This is not a unique problem, and part of the solution is reaching out and talking with other people. You know, many times we want friends, not food.
Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, sorry, I must have missed the last part of what you said.
Oh, I said many times we want friends, not food.
Mm.
And it's important to reach out, for instance, on my message board, or joining a support group, not a diet group, but a support group of people who are working on eating issues. It's a wonderful place to really connect to people. And we bond in the trenches. You know, that's when we really get close to people, when we can be vulnerable and learn to depend on them. And then that actually teaches you life skills so that you don't need to turn to food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's so important is several things you said there, but I mean, especially connecting with other people and having those relationships that will support you, like you said, when you're down, because You know, it's just a natural cycle of life that we all have up days and down days and better days and worse days. And, you know, the important thing is to be able to manage that cycle in a healthy way, like you said, and not have to resort to the food on the down days when you can, you know, resort to the support of other people. It's just, it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. I do think one of the things that gets in the way is people who suffer from depression or anxiety, because that means their, you know, their brain chemistry does not always support staying in the present, being mindful, comforting yourself, reaching out to others, taking risks, and underlying a lot of addictions, including having food problems, are depression and anxiety. So very often, in fact, I was talking to a client last week who would binge and purge, and now she's on an antidepressant. The incidence of both of those are greatly reduced. So some people need to take care of their underlying chemistry, biochemistry, first in order to succeed and to be able to do some of the things to develop the life skills which will help them have a better relationship with food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and how would you know, I mean, if you've got an emotional connection to food, an emotional or unhealthy eating, how do you know if you need to see someone clinically, like a doctor, an expert, or a psychologist, or if it's something that you can work on your own?
Well, you know, now that we have the internet, you can find that information. And people can go to the NIMH, National Institute of Mental Health, website, and look up the criteria for depression and anxiety and see if they fit in. Many of my clients have had major depression, which is, you know, depression that makes it very difficult for you to live a happy, meaningful life, you know, chronically throughout their lives. Other people have something that's called dysthymia, which is a low-level depression. Sure, you can get out of bed. You may have friends, but there's not a lot of passion in life. You may look at things negatively. Maybe hard for you to be in relationship, and that is also treatable. And so you can go look on the website for NIMH and see if you fit in these categories. Also, anxiety, and it's from the same neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine in our brain. If we don't have the right complement because we just didn't get it genetically, it's going to be really hard not to turn to food, which gives us that little burst of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all treatable, and I'm not saying people have to take antidepressants. There's other ways to deal with these other underlying issues, and people can find out the information, and if they think that that is a problem for them, they can get an evaluation by a mental health professional.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that, because you know, I think that is really important that people understand that sometimes this can be a very serious depression or anxiety issue that really needs you know, clinical help with. It's not always something that you can deal with on yourself when it gets to that extent.
One of the biggest problems for dysfunctional or what I call dysregulated eaters is that feeling that they should be able to do it themselves. You know, it's the problem with many addictions. I can do it myself, and that's really shame-based because what it's saying is, I feel I should be able to do it myself. And my outlook is, it doesn't matter how you solve the problem. Just get the problem solved. If you can do it yourself, great. If you need help, great. That there's no more value in doing it yourself than if somebody else helps you.
Right.
There,
exactly.
It's value neutral. The important thing is to get what you need. And as I said, very often, people try so hard to do it themselves, and then they feel like a failure, which is very sad.
Mm-hmm.
I will say right off that I was in psychotherapy when I had my eating issues, and it helped tremendously to understand what was going on inside me. And when I didn't need it anymore, I stopped.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think that's a great point, is that, you know, it's not a lack of courage or a lack of power or willpower to go look for help. It's actually a sign, it's a good sign when you realize that, you know, you can do it with someone else's help and you're not ashamed to take that help. I think that's so important. And not just with eating disorders, but in every area of life. I mean, we all need help with certain things to get certain results in life. So, you know, the quicker you can step out and accept that help, the quicker you're going to move on and solve those problems.
I often ask clients a question, and I tell them ahead of time it's a trick question. I say to them, which is better, dependence or independence? And 9 out of 10 times they'll say independence, and I'll say, wrong, neither is better. What's best is to know when you need to be dependent and when you need to be independent. And if you've got the right balance, then life is going to be pretty easy for you. It's when you feel that one or the other is better, particularly independence, that you get thrown off. I was thinking of some other traits that dysregulated eaters have, which they need to change in order to eat normally. One is all or nothing thinking. Another client just wrote me, I have to clean my plate. Well, she believes she has to clean her plate. You know, if I start eating, I have to finish it. That's nonsense. That we can just look at that thought and we can laugh at it.
Right.
And I really encourage people to start leaving food on their plate purposely, just to break that habit, because we feel anxious when we leave food on the plate, but the anxiety is not really attached to anything. There's no reason to feel anxious. So if you could tolerate the anxiety, eventually it goes away and you formed a new pattern, which is comfortably leaving food on your plate. So it's all or nothing thinking does not work if you want to be a normal eater. I could do it myself. Not being able to move and flow with the ups and downs of life, not staying in the present. We really only have the present. We're so busy thinking about what we did or didn't do, or what we should or might do, that we miss the present. And it's wonderfully refreshing to ground yourself in the present. So those are some of the other life skills that are useful to become a normal eater.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And those are just amazing life skills for every area of life as well. I mean, it really applies to everything. And thank you so much for sharing that. And so with just a few minutes left, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your newest book and, you know, where people can find out more information about you and more information about healthy eating.
Okay. My first book is The Rules of Normal Eating, and that lays out the rules of appetite for hunger, food preference, eating with awareness and fullness and satisfaction. And I write all my books with humor, so they're funny, and people say, oh, it sounds just like you talking to me. But that's a very basic book to read. The Food and Feelings Workbook covers 7 emotions that lead people to troubled eating and how to overcome them, and it's very psychologically based, also done with humor. My third book is What Every Therapist Needs to Know About Treating Eating and Weight Issues, and it's for clinicians who don't specialize in eating disorders as I do, how to recognize and treat clients who have any range of eating or weight problems, from minor to major. My fourth book is Nice Girls Finish Fat, Put Yourself First and Change Your Eating Forever, and it's based on my 30-plus years of practice of seeing, you know, these tremendously talented, accomplished, fabulous women who are so overly nice and take care of other people more than themselves, and then they end up taking care of themselves with food. So that book helps people look at the traits they need to change, what they need to do to add to their niceness. I don't want them to not be nice, but to do what I call color with all the crayons in the box rather than just taking one crayon.
Mm-hmm.
and learning how to negotiate life in a better way so that women won't have to turn to food. I also have a food feelings message board on Yahoo. I blog twice weekly at eatingdisordersblogs.com/healthy. I'm working on two other manuscripts. One is on life skills for eaters, and another is on the unresolved emotional conflicts which keep us stuck in eating. And I'm working to develop an eating app for Facebook so that people will have more access to my thoughts and my work and my ideas and responses than they would doing, you know, having to be in therapy with me. I also do in-person therapy, international phone therapy, and Skype. So people can go to my website, find my email if they're interested in having therapy. I do treatment plans for people so they really know after a consultation with me the directions that they need to go to resolve their eating problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing today, Karen. I know the information has just been so powerful, and I know it's going to touch thousands of people's lives, so thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me.
Hey there, it's Tom Korsnoles again. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Wasn't that an awesome interview with Karen Koenig? Hey, we want to thank you again for subscribing to the Authentic Health Coaching Show, and remember, you can get your free report with Dr. Korsnoles' top 5 nutrition tips at AuthenticHealthCoach.com. So come join the community of like-minded people just like you who are passionate about health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. And I'm wishing you an absolutely incredible day. Take care.